Chapter 28, continued.
Section 5, the Concilium Legionis Mariae. Number 1, there shall be a central council, which shall be called the Concilium Legionis Mariae, in which shall be vested the supreme governing authority of the legion. To it alone, subject always to the rights of the ecclesiastical authority as provided for in these pages, shall belong the right to make, alter, or interpret rules, to set up or repudiate presidia and subordinate councils wherever situated, to determine the policy of the legion on all points, to decide all disputes and appeals, all membership questions, and all points as to the suitability of works or the manner of carrying them out. Number 2, the Concilium Legionis Mariae meets monthly in Dublin, Ireland. Number 3, the Concilium may delegate portion of its functions to its subordinate councils or to individual presidia and may at any time alter the amount of such delegation. Number 4, the Concilium may combine with its own proper functions the functions of a subordinate council or councils. Number 5, the Concilium Legionis Mariae shall consist of the officers of every legionary body which is directly affiliated to the Concilium. The officers of the senior curiae of the Archdiocese of Dublin form the core attendance at the meetings of the Concilium. Due to distance, etc., regular attendance on the part of the great majority of other legionary bodies is not possible. The Concilium reserves the right to vary the representation from the Dublin curiae. Number 6, the spiritual director of the Concilium shall be appointed by the hierarchy of Ireland. Number 7, the elections of officers of directly affiliated councils are subject to ratification by the Concilium. Number 8, the Concilium appoints correspondents to fulfill its functions of superintendence of its distant councils. The correspondent keeps in regular contact with the council, and from minutes received monthly prepares a report for presentation to the Concilium meeting when required. He attends the meetings of the Concilium and takes part in the proceedings, but unless he is a member of the Concilium, he has not the right to vote. Number 9. The duly authorized representatives of the Concilium may enter into any legionary area, visit the legionary bodies there, carry on work of a promotional character, and generally exercise functions which it is allowable for the Concilium to exercise. Number 10, to the Concilium Legionis Mariae alone shall belong, subject to the Constitution and rules of the Legion, the right to amend the handbook. Number 11, changes of rule cannot be effected, save with the agreement of the great bulk of the legionary bodies. These, through their appropriate councils, shall be notified of any proposed change of rule and given sufficient time to signify their views on the subject. The views may be signified through the representatives actually present at the Concilium meeting or by writing. And the following is a quote from Cardinal Newman, Ardor, the Witness and Instrument of Unity. Quote, thus God's power indeed is infinite, but it is still subordinate to his wisdom and his justice. His justice, again, is infinite, but it, too, is subordinate to his love, and his love, in turn, is infinite. But it is subordinate to his incommunicable sanctity. There is an understanding between attribute and attribute, so that one does not interfere with the other, for each is supreme in its own sphere, and thus an infinitude of infinities, acting each in its own order, are combined together in the infinitely simple unity of God. Unquote.
Chapter 28. Continued.
Number 2, the Curia and the Comitium. Number 1, when two or more presidia have been established in any city, town, or district, a governing body termed the Curia should be set up. The Curia shall be composed of all the officers, spiritual directors included, of the presidia in its area. Number 2, where it is found necessary to confer on a Curia, in addition to its own proper functions, certain powers of superintendence over one or several curiae, such higher curia shall be styled more particularly a comitium. The Comitium is not a new council. It continues to act as a curia in respect of its own area and to govern directly its own presidia. In addition, it supervises one or more curiae. Each curia and presidium directly related to a comitium shall be entitled to full representation on the latter. In order to relieve the representatives of a curia from attendance at all the meetings of the comitium, which, added to the meetings of their own curia, might form an undue burden, it would be permissible to deal with the business of that curia and to require the attendance of its representatives only at every second or third meeting of the comitium. A comitium shall not ordinarily cover an area larger than a diocese. Number 3, the spiritual director shall be appointed by the ordinary of the diocese in which the curia or comitium functions. Number 4, the curia shall exercise authority over its presidia subject to the constitution of the legion. It shall appoint their officers, other than the spiritual director, and keep count of their terms of office. As to the manner of appointment, see paragraph 11 of chapter 14, the presidium. Number 5, the curia will ensure the scrupulous carrying out of the rule by the presidia and their members. The following shall form important parts of the work of a curia. A. The education and supervision of the officers in their duties and in the general management of their presidia. B. The receiving of a report from each presidium not less frequently than once a year. C. The exchange of experiences. D. The consideration of new works. E. The creation of high standards. F. The ensuring that every legionary satisfactorily performs the work obligation. G. The extension of the legion and the stimulation of presidia to recruit auxiliaries, including the aftercare and organization of the latter. It is manifest, therefore, that a high degree of moral courage will be required from the curia, and especially from its officers, for the proper discharge of its functions. Number 6. The fate of the legion lies in the hands of its curiae, and its future depends on their development. The state of the legion in any district must be counted precarious until a curia has been established there. Number 7. Legionaries under 18 years of age cannot sit on a senior curia, but if deemed advisable by the curia, a junior curia subject to the curia may be set up. Number 8. It is absolutely essential that the officers of the curia, and particularly the president, should be easily accessible to the legionaries who are subject to that curia, so that difficulties or proposals or other matters which are not ripe for more public discussion may be talked over. Number 9. It is most desirable that the officers, and particularly the president, should be able to devote considerable time to the duties of their positions, on which so much depends. Number 10. When there are a large number of presidia attached to a curia, the resulting number of representatives at the latter will be considerable. This fact may possibly involve disadvantages from the aspects of accommodation and of administrative perfection, but the Legion believes that these will be amply compensated for in other respects. The Legion looks to its curiae to supply another function than that of administrative machinery. Each curia is the heart and brain of the group of presidia which are attached to it. Being the center of unity, it follows that the more numerous the bonds, that is, the representatives, which link it to the individual presidia, the stronger will be that unity, the more certain will the presidia be to produce the spirit and methods of the Legion. It will be at the curia meetings alone that the things which relate to the essence of the Legion can be adequately discussed and learned. Thence they will be transmitted to the presidia and there diffused amongst the members. Number 11. The curia shall cause each presidium to be visited periodically, if possible twice a year, with a view to encouraging it and seeing that all things are being carried out as they should be. It is important that this duty be not fulfilled in a carping or fault-finding fashion, which would end by causing the advent of visitors to be dreaded and their recommendations to be resented, but in a spirit of affection and humility, which will presume that there is as much to be learned from as taught to the Presidium visited. At least a 4 weeks' notice of such intended visitation should be given to a Presidium. Occasionally, one hears of this visitation being resented on the score that it amounts to outside interference. Such an attitude is not respectful to the Legion, of which those Presidia are but parts, and of which they should be loyal parts. Shall the hand say to the head, I need not your help? Furthermore, it is unthankful, for do not those units owe their very existence to that outside interference? It is inconsistent, for how willingly they accept from their central authority things which they are pleased to regard as benefits. It is foolish, too, for thereby they set themselves against universal experience. It is the lesson of all organized life, whether religious, civil, or military, that an ungrudging, comprehensive, and practical recognition of the central principle is essential to the preservation of spirit and efficiency. A regular visitation of the units of organization is an all-important part of the application of that principle, and no competent form of authority neglects its duty in this respect. Apart, however, from the fact that visitation from the Curia is necessary to health, each Presidium should remember that it is part of the rule, and hence should insist that this duty is not overlooked by the Curia. It goes without saying that a cordial welcome should be given to the visitors. On the occasion of this visitation, the various membership rolls, the secretary's and treasurer's books, the worksheets, and the other items of the Presidium system must be examined with a view to judging if they are properly kept and to ascertaining if the legionary promise has been made in the case of each member who has fulfilled the required period of probation. This inspection should be made by two representatives of the Curia. These need not be restricted to Curia officers. Any experienced legionary may be appointed. The visitors are to submit to the Curia officers a written report on the result of their inspection. A specimen report sheet can be obtained from the Concilium. Defects which are found should not, in the first instance, be made the subject of open comment either at the Presidium itself or at the Curia. They should be discussed with the spiritual director and the president of the Presidium. If this does not secure rectification, the matter should be brought before the Curia. Number 12. The Curia stands in much the same relation to its members as the Presidium does to its members. Thus, all that is said in these pages regarding the attendance and conduct of legionaries at the Presidium meetings is to be taken as applying equally to the attitude of Presidium representatives towards their Curia meetings. Zeal in other respects will not compensate for failure on the part of the officers to give a faithful attendance at the meetings of their Curia. Number 13. The Curia shall meet at times and places to be fixed by the Curia itself with the approval of its next highest council. Such meetings should, if possible, be held not less frequently than once a month. See the reasons for this frequency, Section 1, Paragraph 19 of this chapter. Number 14. An agenda for the meeting shall be prepared beforehand by the Secretary in consultation with the President and circulated to each Spiritual Director and each President previous to the Presidium meeting immediately before the Curia meeting. It shall be the duty of the President to notify the other representatives of the Presidium. Such agenda should be provisional, and as much liberty as possible should be extended to members to raise additional points. Number 15. Vigilant watch must be kept by the Curia to ensure that Presidia do not drift into the giving of material relief, which would mark the end of all really useful legionary work. The periodic inspection of treasurer's statements will help the Curia to discern the beginnings of any incorrect tendency. Number 16, the president, and of course the same applies to all those others in authority, should beware of falling into what is an exceedingly common fault, that of keeping even the most minute items of responsibility in his own hands. One result of such a tendency will be the slowing down of work. It may even paralyze the whole system in large centers where the work is considerable in quantity. The narrower the neck of the bottle, the more slowly will the contents be given forth, until sometimes people break off that neck in their impatience. But another serious feature is that the denial of some responsibility to those who are fit to assume it does injustice both to those individuals and to the whole legion. The exercising of some degree of responsibility is a necessary part of the development of great qualities in the individual. Responsibility indeed can transmute mere sand into gold. The secretary should not be held restricted to secretarial work, nor the treasurer to the keeping of the accounts. All officers and even senior and promising members should be entrusted with spheres of initiative and control for which, subject, of course, to the higher authority, they will be held responsible. The ultimate aim must be the filling of every legionary with a sense of responsibility for the well-being and extension of the legion as a potent means of helping souls. And the following is a quote from Cardinal Newman, "Ardor, the witness and instrument of unity." This and the next three quotations form, in the original, one passage, quote, "All the works of God are found on unity, for they are found on himself, who is the most awfully simple and transcendent of possible unities. He is emphatically one, and whereas he is also multiform in his attributes and his acts, as they present themselves to our minds, it follows that order and harmony must be of his very essence." Unquote.
Chapter 28, continued.
Section 3, the Regia. Number 1, a consul designated by the Concilium to exercise authority over the Legion of Mary in a large region, and ranking next in status to a senatus, shall be called a Regia. The Concilium will decide whether a Regia shall be affiliated directly to the Concilium or to a senatus. Number 2, when Regia status has been conferred on an existing consul, it shall continue to exercise its original functions in addition to its new responsibilities. See Section 1, Paragraph 19 of this chapter on Government of the Legion. Membership of the Regia shall consist of A. The officers of every legionary body directly affiliated to the Regia and B. The members of the consul on which Regia status has been conferred. When such is the case, Number 3, the spiritual director of a regia shall be appointed by the bishops of the diocese in which that regia has jurisdiction. Number 4, the election of officers of directly affiliated councils are subject to ratification by the regia. These officers have the duty to attend regia meetings unless circumstances, that is, distance, etc., prevent them. Number 5, experience has shown the appointment of correspondents to be the most effective way for the regia to fulfill its functions of superintendence of its distant affiliated consuls. The correspondent keeps in regular contact with the consul and from the minutes received monthly prepares a report for presentation to the regia meeting when required. He attends the meetings of the regia and takes part in the proceedings, but unless he is a member of the regia, he has not the right to vote. Number 6, a copy of the minutes of the regia meetings should be sent to the consul to which it is directly affiliated. Number 7, any proposed change in the composition of the regia which would significantly affect the core attendance at the meeting would require formal sanction by the concilium, whether the regia is affiliated directly to the concilium or to a senatus. Number 8. In Roman days, the regia was the residence and office of the Pontifex Maximus. Later, it designated a king's capital or court. And the following is a quote from Cardinal Newman, Ardor, the Witness and Instrument of Unity. Quote, "To be many and distinct in his attributes, yet after all to be but one, to be sanctity, justice, truth, love, power, wisdom, to be at once each of these as if he were nothing but it, as if the rest were not, this implies in the divine nature an infinitely sovereign and utterly incomprehensible ardor, which is an attribute as wonderful as any and the result of all the others." Unquote.
Chapter 28, continued.
Section 4 of the Sonatus, number 1. A consul designated by the concilium to exercise authority over the Legion of Mary in a country shall be called a Sonatus. It must be affiliated directly to the concilium. In countries where, by reason of size or for other reasons, a single Sonatus would not be adequate, two or more Sonatus may be approved, each of which shall depend directly on the concilium and shall exercise authority over the Legion in the area assigned to it by the concilium. Number 2. When Sonatus status has been conferred on an existing consul, it shall continue to exercise its original functions in addition to its new responsibilities. See Section 1, Paragraph 19 of this chapter on Government of the Legion. Membership of the Sonatus shall consist of A, the officers of every legionary body directly affiliated to the Sonatus, and B, the members of the consul on which Sonatus status has been conferred, when such is the case. Number 3, the spiritual director of a Sonatus shall be appointed by the bishops of the diocese in which that Sonatus has jurisdiction. Number 4, the elections of officers of directly affiliated councils are subject to ratification by the Sonatus. These officers have the duty to attend Sonatus meetings unless circumstances, for example, distance, etc., prevent them. Number 5, experience has shown the appointment of correspondents to be the most effective way for the Sonatus to fulfill its functions of superintendence of its distant consuls. The correspondent keeps in regular contact with the consul and, from the minutes received, monthly prepares a report for presentation to the Sonatus meeting when required. He attends the meetings of the Sonatus and takes part in the proceedings, but unless he is a member of the Sonatus, he has not the right to vote. Number 6. A copy of the minutes of the Sonatus meeting should be sent to the concilium. Number 7. Any proposed change in the composition of the Sonatus, which would significantly affect the core attendance at the meeting, would require formal sanction by the concilium. And the following is a quote from Cardinal Newman, Ardor, the Witness and Instrument of Unity. Quote, "God is an infinite law as well as an infinite power, wisdom, and love. Moreover, the very idea of order implies the idea of the subordinate. If order exists in the divine attributes, they must have relations one to another. And though each is perfect in itself, it must act so as not to impair the perfection of the rest, and must seem to yield to the rest on particular occasions." Unquote.
Chapter 28, continued.
Section 5, the Concilium Legionis Mariae. Number 1, there shall be a central council, which shall be called the Concilium Legionis Mariae, in which shall be vested the supreme governing authority of the Legion. To it alone, subject always to the rights of the ecclesiastical authority, as provided for in these pages, shall belong the right to make, alter, or interpret rules, to set up or repudiate presidia and subordinate councils wherever situated, to determine the policy of the Legion on all points, to decide all disputes and appeals, all membership questions, and all points as to the suitability of works or the manner of carrying them out. Number 2. The Concilium Legionis Mariae meets monthly in Dublin, Ireland. Number 3. The Concilium may delegate a portion of its functions to its subordinate councils or to individual presidia, and may at any time alter the amount of such delegation. Number 4. The concilium may combine with its own proper functions the functions of a subordinate council or councils. Number 5. The concilium legionis Mariae shall consist of the officers of every legionary body which is directly affiliated to the concilium. The officers of the senior curiae of the Archdiocese of Dublin form the core attendance at the meetings of the concilium. Due to distance, etc., regular attendance on the part of the great majority of other legionary bodies is not possible. The concilium reserves the right to vary the representation from the Dublin curiae. Number 6. The spiritual director of the concilium shall be appointed by the hierarchy of Ireland. Number 7. The elections of officers of directly affiliated councils are subject to ratification by the concilium. Number 8. The concilium appoints correspondents to fulfill its functions of superintendents of its distant councils. The correspondent keeps in regular contact with the council and from minutes received monthly prepares a report for presentation to the concilium meeting when required. He attends the meetings of the concilium and takes part in the proceedings, but unless he is a member of the concilium, he has not the right to vote. Number 9. The duly authorized representatives of the concilium may enter into any legionary area, visit the legionary bodies there, carry on work of a promotional character, and generally exercise functions which it is allowable for the concilium to exercise. Number 10. To the concilium legionis Mariae alone shall belong, subject to the constitution and rules of the legion, the right to amend the handbook. Number 11. Changes of rule cannot be effected, save with the agreement of the great bulk of the legionary bodies. These, through their appropriate councils, shall be notified of any proposed change of rule and given sufficient time to signify their views on the subject. The views may be signified through the representatives actually present at the concilium meeting or by writing. And the following is a quote from Cardinal Newman, Ardor, the witness and instrument of unity. Quote, thus God's power indeed is infinite, but it is still subordinate to his wisdom and his justice. His justice, again, is infinite, but it, too, is subordinate to his love, and his love, in turn, is infinite. But it is subordinate to his incommunicable sanctity. There is an understanding between attribute and attribute, so that one does not interfere with the other, for each is supreme in its own sphere, and thus an infinitude of infinities, acting each in its own order, are combined together in the infinitely simple unity of God. Unquote. Chapter 29, Legionary Loyalty. The whole idea of organization is the unification of the many. From the member up through the ascending grades of authority in the legion must the principle of connection exist, and in the measure that it is wanting, will there be a departure from the principle of life. In a voluntary organization, the cement of this connection is loyalty. The loyalty of the member to the presidium, of the presidium to its curia, and so on through the ascending grades of legionary authority to the concilium legionis, and to the ecclesiastical authorities everywhere. True loyalty will inspire legionary and presidium and consul with the dread of independent action. On all doubtful points, in all difficult situations, and with regard to every new work or novel departure, recourse must be had to appropriate authority for guidance and sanction. The fruit of loyalty is obedience, and the test of the latter is the readiness to accept situations and decisions which are unpalatable, and let it be remarked, to accept them cheerfully. This prompt and cordial obedience is always difficult. Sometimes to give it violates one's natural inclinations to such an extent as to amount to heroism, to be, in fact, a sort of martyrdom. And in such terms does St. Ignatius of Loyola speak of it. Quote, those, he says, who by a generous effort resolve to obey, acquire great merits. Obedience in its sacrifice resembles martyrdom, unquote. The Legion expects from its children everywhere that spirit of heroic and sweet docility to proper authority of every sort. The Legion is an army, the army of the Virgin Most Humble. It must exhibit in its everyday working what is forthcoming in profusion from any earthly army. Heroism and sacrifice, even supreme sacrifice. Demands of a supremely exacting character are all the time being made on legionaries too. Not so often are they called on to offer their bodies to laceration and death like the soldiers of the world. But let them rise gloriously higher in the things of the spirit. Let them be ready to offer their feelings, their judgment, their independence, their pride, their will, to the wounds of contradiction and the death of a wholehearted submission when authority requires. Deep harm to disobey seen obedience is the bond of rule, says Tennyson. But the Legion's lifeline can be sundered by more than willful disobedience. The same result is achieved by the officers whose neglect of the duties of attendance or correspondence cuts off their presidia or consuls from the main tide of legionary life. The same deep harm is done by those, whether officers or members, who attend their meetings, but whose attitude there, from whatever cause, is calculated to promote disunion. And the following is a quote from Marmion, Christ, the Life of the Soul. Quote, Jesus obeyed his mother. You have read how all that the evangelists tell of Christ's hidden life at Nazareth with Mary and Joseph is that he was subject to them and advanced in wisdom and age. Luke chapter 2, verses 51 to 52. Is there anything incompatible with his divinity in this? Certainly not. The Word is made flesh. He has stooped so far as to take a nature like to ours, sin accepted. He came, said he, not to be ministered unto, but to minister. Matthew chapter 20, verse 28. To be obedient unto death. Philippians chapter 2, verse 8. That is why he willed to obey his mother. At Nazareth, he obeyed Mary and Joseph, the two privileged beings whom God had placed near him. In a certain measure, Mary shares in the authority of the Eternal Father over his son's humanity. Jesus could say of his mother what he said of his Father in heaven, I do always the things that please him. John chapter 8, verse 29, end of quote. Chapter 30, Functions. The duty of periodically bringing together the members of the Legion in any district in order that they may know each other and that the spirit of unity may be fostered is imposed upon each curia. The following are the functions of the Legion. Section 1, Beatitudes. Bearing in mind the importance of devotion to Mary in the Legion system, each year there shall be a consecration of legionaries to Our Lady. The consecration, which shall comprise both an individual and a collective consecration, will take place on the 25th of March or on a day close thereto and will be known as Beatitudes. This Latin word, meaning as it does an army ranged in battle array, is appropriate to a ceremony in which the legionaries, as a body assembled to renew their fealty to Mary, Queen of the Legion, and from her to receive strength and blessing for yet another year's battle with the forces of evil. Moreover, the word is in effective contrast with Presidium, which contemplates the Legion, no longer drawn up in united array, but split up into its various sections, each engaged in its own particular sphere of duty. The Beatitudes is the great central annual function of the Legion, so that it is necessary to stress the importance of attendance on the part of every member. The essential idea of the Legion, upon which all else is built, is that of working in union with and independence on Mary, its Queen. The Beatitudes is the solemn expression of that union and dependence, the renewal individual and collective, of the Legionary Declaration of Fealty. Hence it is manifest that any legionaries who can attend and yet fail to do so have little or none of the spirit of the Legion in them. The membership of such person is not an asset to the Legion. The following is the procedure. On the day fixed for the ceremony, the legionaries shall assemble, if possible, in the church. At a convenient spot is placed a statue of the Immaculate Conception, suitably decorated with flowers and candles. In front of the statue will stand a large-sized replica of the Legion Vexillium, which is described in Chapter 27. The proceedings commence with a hymn, followed by the opening prayers of the Legion, including the Rosary. An address by a priest on the significance of the consecration to Our Lady follows. Then the procession towards the statue begins. The spiritual directors go first in single file, then the legionaries also singly, except in the case of great numbers, when they may advance in pairs. On reaching the vexillum, each one or each pair pauses. Then, placing the hand upon the staff of the vexillum, he repeats vocally as an individual act of consecration the following words: I am all yours, my queen, my mother, and all that I have is yours. This done, the vexillum is relinquished. The legionary bows slightly and passes on. If the number of legionaries is large, the making of the individual act of consecration will occupy some time, but the impressiveness of the ceremony will gain rather than lose by that fact. It will help if an organ be played during the procession of the legionaries to and from the statue. It would not be in order to use more than one vexillum. Such expedient would shorten the proceedings, but it would destroy their unity. Moreover, the note of haste would be discordant. The special characteristic of the Appia should be its order and dignity. When all legionaries have resumed their places, an act of consecration to Our Lady is said aloud by the priest on behalf of all present. Following this, the catena is recited, all present standing. Then follows, if at all possible, benediction of the Most Blessed Sacrament, after which the concluding prayers of the Legion are recited, a hymn is sung, and the Appia terminates. It would be in order, of course, to have Holy Mass celebrated on the occasion of the Appia in place of the benediction, the other details of the ceremony remaining the same. The celebration of the Paschal Mystery would absorb into itself and present to the Eternal Father through the one Mediator and in the Holy Spirit all the consecrations and spiritual offerings which are placed in the paternal hands of the generous associate and humble handmaid of the Lord. Lumen Gentium, paragraph 61. The above formula of consecration, I am all yours, etc., should not be mechanically or thoughtlessly pronounced. Each one should compress into it the fullest degree of understanding and gratitude. As a help towards this, he should study Amerian Synthesis, Appendix 11, page 351. This endeavors to set forth the unique part played by Mary in salvation, and accordingly the extent of each one's debt to her. Perhaps a synthesis could be made the subject of the spiritual reading and of the allocutio at a presidium meeting shortly before the Appias. It is suggested that it be also used as the collective act of consecration at the ceremony itself. And the following is a quote from St. Alphonsus Liguori. Quote, Mary is an object of terror to the powers of hell. She is terrible as an army set in battle array. Song of Songs, chapter 6, verse 10. For, like a wise commander, she well knows how to dispose her power, her mercy, and her prayers for the confusion of the enemy and for the benefit of her servants, unquote.
Chapter 30, continued.
Section 2, the Annual General Reunion. At a time as near as possible to the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, a reunion of all the members shall be called. If desired, this may begin with a church celebration. There follows a social evening. If not already recited at a church function, the full Legion prayers are to be said, divided into three parts as at a meeting. It is better to confine this program to the contributions of legionaries. In addition to lighter items, there should be some addresses or papers of legionary interest. It will surely be unnecessary to remind legionaries that formality must find no place there. This is to be specially guarded against where many legionaries are participating. It must be the object to make all those present know each other better. Therefore, the program should afford opportunity for movement and conversation. Those in charge should contrive that the members do not eat together in parties and thus frustrate the main purpose of the function, which is the fostering of the spirit of unity and affection in the Legion family. And the following is a quote taken from Felder, The Ideals of St. Francis of Assisi. Quote, "Joyousness lent a sweet charm to the spiritual knighthood of St. Francis. As a genuine knight of Christ, Francis was inexpressibly happy to serve his liege, to follow him in poverty, and to be like unto him in suffering. And this blissful happiness in the service, the imitation and the suffering of Christ, he announced as knightly minstrel and troubadour of God to the whole world. Francis' entire life was attuned to this basic note of joy. With imperturbable calmness and cheerfulness of mind, he sang to himself and to God songs of joy in his heart. His ceaseless endeavor was to keep himself interiorly and exteriorly in a joyous mood. In the intimate circle of his brothers, he likewise knew how to sound the pure key note of joyfulness and to make it swell to such full harmony that they felt themselves raised to an almost heavenly atmosphere. The same joyful note pervaded the converse of the saint with his fellow men. Even his sermons, in spite of their burden of penance, became hymns of gladness, and his mere appearance was an occasion of festive joy for all classes of people." Unquote.
Chapter 30, continued.
Section 3, an outdoor function. The holding of this function dates back to the earliest days of the Legion. It is not obligatory, but it is recommended. It may take the form of an excursion, pilgrimage, or outdoor function. As determined by the curia, this may be either a curia or a presidium function. In the latter event, two or more presidia may combine for the function. Section 4, the presidium function. It is strongly recommended that each presidium will hold a special function about the Feast of the Nativity of Our Lady. In centers where there are many presidia, several presidia may, if they desire, combined to hold such a festival. Suitable persons who are not legionaries may be invited to attend with a view to inducing them to undertake membership. It is recommended that the full Legion prayers, including the rosary, be said, divided into three parts of that of presidium meeting. The time thus taken from the social part of the evening does not amount to many minutes, but this tribute to Our Lady will be more than repaid by the enhanced success of the function. The Queen of the Legion is the cause of our joy, and she will reply by making the occasion one of special happiness. Interspersed among the musical items should be at least one sharp Legion talk. All will thereby learn a little more about the Legion, and incidentally, the program will be diversified. Mere entertainment tends to pall. Section 5, the Congress. The first Legion Congress was held by the Clare, Ireland, Curia on Easter Sunday, 1939. Its success led to imitation, as success always does, and now that feature has been firmly grafted into the Legion system. A Congress should be confined to a Comitium or a Curia. Assemblies on a wider basis would not be in line with the primary conception of a Congress and would not produce the intended fruits. Therefore, the name of Congress should not be applied to those assemblies. if held, nor should they be regarded as substituting for a Congress. But visitors from other areas may be invited to a Congress. The Concilium has ruled that an area should not hold a Congress more often than every second year. A whole day should be devoted to the function. The availability of a religious house will solve many of the problems. If possible, the proceedings should begin with Mass, followed by a short address by the spiritual director or other priest, and should terminate with benediction of the Most Blessed Sacrament. The day is divided into sessions, each session having its subject or subjects. Each subject should be very briefly opened up by someone who will have previously prepared his contribution. All should take some part in the discussion. This general participation forms the very life of the Congress. Again, it is emphasized that presiding officers are not to talk much nor to intervene constantly in the discussions. Congresses, like council meetings, are to be run on the parliamentary method. That is, on lines of universal participation regulated from the chair. Some chairpersons show a tendency to comment on the utterance of every speaker. This is the opposite idea to the Congress idea, and it should not be tolerated. The assistance of some representatives of a higher governing body would be desirable. These could perform some of the special duties, for example, presiding, inaugurating, discussions, etc. Any striving after oratorical effect is to be avoided, for it would create an air of unreality. That is not the Legion climate. In it, no one will be inspired. No problem will be solved. Sometimes all the legionaries are brought to the Congress. Sometimes only the officers of Presidia. In the former case, it would be allowable at the first session to divide the legionaries according to their different offices, the ordinary members being in one body. Then the special duties and needs of each would be considered. Or, alternatively, the legionaries could be divided according to the works on which they are engaged. But such dividing up is optional, and in any case, the subsequent sessions should not be subdivided. It would be inconsistent to bring the members together and then keep them separated for most of the time. It is to be noted that the duty of officers has a wider scope than the routine functions belonging to each office. A secretary, for instance, whose official horizon was bounded by his minute book, would indeed be a defective officer. As all the officers are members of the Curia, their session must investigate methods of perfecting the working of the Curia, both in regard to its actual meetings and its general administration. A Congress must not amount merely to a Curia meeting, occupying itself with the same administrative details and queries that would fall to be dealt with at the Curia. It should apply itself to the fundamentals, but of course all the lessons learned at the Congress should be put into force by the Curia. The subjects to be dealt with should concern the main principles of the Legion broadly. A. The devotional system of the Legion. The Legion is not understood unless its many-sided devotional aspect is to some reasonable extent grasped by the members, and the Legion is not being properly worked unless that devotion be linked to the act of work so intimately as to be its motive and its spirit. In other words, the devotion must animate the whole work as the soul animates the body. B. The legionary qualities and how they are to be developed. C. The methodical system of the Legion, including the conducting of the meetings and the vital matter of the members' reports, that is, the manner of giving them and of commenting on them. D. The Legion works, including the improvement of methods and the planning of those new works which will enable the Legion to reach out to every person. An item of the Congress should be a special talk by some spiritual director or legionary qualified to give it on some aspect of legionary devotion, idealism, or duty. Each session should begin with and close with prayer. The Legion prayers will provide for three of those occasions. Careful timekeeping and stewarding is imperative. Failure in this department will ruin the day. There must be diversification as between successive congresses in the same area. Only a limited number of topics can be covered at a single congress, whereas it is necessary that over a period of years, much new ground be plowed up. Secondly, there must never be a sense of standing still. Therefore, change, for the very sake of change, must be sought. Thirdly, the success of a particular congress naturally suggests that the same program be adhered to on the next occasion. But part of that success was certainly due to the element of novelty, and this is spent by the first production. If novelty is to figure as a stimulating ingredient in each new congress, the event must be preceded by ingenious planning. And the following quote is from Granger, The Liturgical Year. Quote, if we wish to know in what manner the faithful soul is to be prepared for the coming of the divine Paraclete, let us go in thought to the cenacle where the disciples have come together. There, according to the ardor of the Master, they are persevering in prayer as they await the power from on high that is to come on them and clothe them as with armor for the warfare which lies before them. In that sacred abode of recollection and peace, a reverential eye rests on Mary, the Mother of Jesus, the masterpiece of the Holy Spirit, the Church of the Living God. From her, by the action of the same Holy Spirit, will issue, as from the womb of her mother, the Church militant, which this new Eve represents and still contains within her. End of quote. Chapter 31, Extension and Recruiting. Number 1, the duty of extension is not for the higher consuls alone, nor for curia officers alone. It is the duty of each member of the curia. Nay more, it is the duty of each individual legionary, and each one must be made to realize that fact and to account now and then for his stewardship. The influencing of others by interview or correspondence is an obvious method of fulfilling this duty, but special ways will suggest themselves to each one. If many centers could be made to send forth impulses to spread the legion, it would soon exist in all places, and the large harvest fields would be thronged with willing laborers. Luke chapter 10, verse 2. Therefore, these important subjects of extension and recruiting should frequently be brought to the notice of the members so that each one be made acutely conscious of his duty in those directions. Number 2. An efficient branch of the legion will be the source of immense good, as one may suppose that this good will be doubled by the establishment of a second branch. Every member, and not merely the officers, should endeavor to bring about this desirable thing. As soon as it is found that the members' reports and other items of the agenda had regularly to be curtailed in order to anticipate the automatic closure, a stage will have been reached when division is not only desirable but necessary. If not then effected, a dropsical state will supervene, in which interest in the work will diminish and the membership will shrink. The Presidium will not only lose the power of transmitting life to another branch, but will find it difficult to preserve its own existence. To the proposal to form an additional Presidium in a particular locality, it may be alleged that present numbers are coping satisfactorily with the existing needs. Against this, it is to be emphasized that, as the primary purpose of the Legion is the sanctification of its own members, and of the community at large through the play of that holiness, it logically follows that increase of membership must, for this reason alone, be also a principal aim. Possibly the provision of work for the new members may be somewhat of a problem in small places. Nevertheless, let new members be accepted and sought. The Legion must never think in terms of limitation. Better material than that already within the ranks might be excluded. When the more obvious needs have been covered, look deeper. Work is necessary to enable the machine to function. Therefore, it must be found, and it is there. In places where the Legion already exists, the effort should be made to provide the officers and a fair proportion of the new members by transfer from an existing branch. Presidia should consider it as the greatest honor to supply their best material for the formation of a new presidium. This is the healthiest form of pruning. A presidium depleted by such a gift of its members will find its ranks quickly refilled and its apostolate attended by an added benediction. In towns or localities where no branch of the Legion already exists, it may not be feasible to secure members with legionary experience, in which case the founders of the new presidium must apply themselves all the more assiduously to the study of the handbook and whatever commentaries may be available thereon. In setting up the first presidium in a new place, it is well to diversify its work as much as possible. This will better ensure the interests of the meetings and thus promote the health of the presidium. Moreover, the varying abilities and tastes of the members can thereby be provided for. Number 3, there is need for a word of caution on the subject of recruiting members. There is a real danger that the requirements may be made too severe. Naturally, the standard of those who have been members for some time will be higher than general standards. This must be allowed for in considering new members. It would be incorrect to insist upon a standard from a new recruit, which the existing members only reached after some time in the Legion. It is very common for Presidia to excuse a low recruiting figure on the ground that suitable material is not available, but seldom will this explanation be found justified on an examination of all the circumstances. It is suggested that the fault lies almost invariably with the Presidium itself, either A, no serious effort is being made to recruit, which means that there is individual and collective neglect of duty by the legionaries, or B, the Presidium is making the mistake of applying to possible recruits over stringent tests, such as would have excluded the bulk of its original and present members. Those responsible argue that they must not risk the entry of unsuitable material, but neither must they deny the benefits of membership to all except a tiny few. If choice has to be made between undue rigor and undue laxity, the former is the greater error, because it kills the lay apostolate for want of workers. The other course would merely breed mistakes, and these can be repaired. The Presidium will take a medium course, but some element of risk must inevitably be faced. The only certain way of ascertaining that material is suitable is by actual experiment. The real safeguard is that the unsuitable person, if he does enter, quickly drops out under the stress of the work. Who ever heard of the raising of an army being abandoned because of the fear that inefficient material might creep in? The system of the army exists for the molding and handling of average human material in quantity. Likewise, the Legion, being an army, must aim at a fairly large membership. It has, of course, its tests for membership, but those tests should not be such that good, average material cannot pass them. The spiritual and close-knit system of the Legion exists for the purpose of molding and controlling persons who require molding and discipline, not for supermen. There should be no question of taking in only a type which is so superlatively holy and discreet as not to represent the ordinary laity at all. To sum up, therefore, the sorrow is not that so few are fit for membership, but that so few are willing to assume the burden of it. This leads to the further considerations which follow.
C. Eligible persons may be deterred from joining because the atmosphere of the presidium is excessively staid or stiff or otherwise uncongenial to them. The Legion does not restrict its membership to the young, but the young must be specially sought for and catered for. If the Legion does not attract them, it is largely failing in its purpose, for the movement which does not appeal to the young will never exert a wide influence. Furthermore, the young are the key to the future. Therefore, the reasonable tastes of young must be understood and allowed for. bright, generous, enthusiastic youth must not be kept out by setting up standards which are inappropriate to the young or which may be nothing else but killjoy standards. D. The usual excuse, "I have not the time," is probably true. Most people fill up their time, but it is not with religious activities. These ranking as a last priority. It would represent an eternal benefit to those persons to make them see that they are living according to a wrong scale of values. The apostolate should be a first priority, so that some of those other things would yield place to it. The following is a quote from Margie Oleg Marianeste. A primary law for every religious society is to perpetuate itself, to extend its apostolic action over the world, and to reach the greatest possible number of souls. Increase and multiply and fill the earth. Genesis 1:28. This law of life imposes itself as a duty upon each person who becomes a member for the society. Pierre Caminade thus formulates this law. We must make conquest for the Blessed Virgin, make those with whom we live understand how sweet it is to belong to Mary, so as to induce many of them to join us in our onward march. End of quote.
Chapter 32, Objections Which May Be Anticipated. Number 1, No Need for the Legion Here. Zealous persons desirous of starting a legion in a new area may expect the objection that the legion is not required in that particular place. As the legion is not an organization for the doing of any one special type of work, but is primarily for the development of Catholic zeal and spirit, which can then be applied to the doing of any work desired, such an objection usually amounts to a statement that there is no local need for Catholic zeal, an assertion which sufficiently confutes itself. According to Pierre Raoul Plus, compressed the definition, quote, a Christian is one to whom God has entrusted his fellow men, unquote. In every place, without exception, there is vital need for such an intense apostolate, and this for many reasons. Firstly, because those members of the flock who are capable of it should be given an effective opportunity of living the apostolic life. Secondly, because the stirrings of such an apostolate in the general populace are necessary in these days. If religion is to be prevented from settling down into routine or materialism. Thirdly, the patient and intensive labors of such workers are required for the shepherding of those whose lives are frustrated or of those whose tendency is to stray. On all superiors rests responsibility for developing to the full the spiritual capacity of those in their charge. What then of apostleship, that distinctive and essential ingredient of the Christian character? Therefore, the call to the apostolate must be made. But to call, without providing the means for responding, is little better than silence. For few of those who hear will have the ability to work out the means for themselves. Thus, machinery in the shape and that apostolic organization must be set up. Number 2. Persons suitable for membership are not available. As this objection usually proceeds from a misconception as to the type of worker required, it may in general be stated that every office, shop, and place of work holds potential legionaries. Those potential legionaries may be learned or unlettered, laborers or leisured, or in the ranks of the unemployed. They are not the monopoly of any particular color, race, or class, but can be found in all. The Legion has a special gift of being able to to enlist in the service of the church this hidden force, this undeveloped loveliness of character. Monsignor Alfred O'Rahilly, as a result of a study of Legion activity, was moved to write as follows, quote, "I made a great discovery, or rather I found that the discovery had been made, that there is a latent heroism in seemingly ordinary men and women. Unknown sources of energy had been tapped." End of quote. Standards for membership should not go beyond those which the popes have had in mind when they declared that in any class, whatever, an elite could be formed and trained to the apostolate. In this connection, paragraph 3b of chapter 31, Extension and Recruiting, should be read most carefully. Also, chapter 40, section 6, The Legion as the Complement of the Missionary, which urges the wide extension of legionary membership among the newly won Christian communities. A genuine difficulty in finding members would indicate an extraordinary low spiritual standard in that locality, and so far from proving the need for inaction, would demonstrate conclusively the paramount need for a branch of Legion to play the part of a good leaven. Mentally digest the fact that the leaven is our large prescription for raising standards. Matthew chapter 13, verse 33. Let it be remembered that a presidium can be formed with as few as 4 or 5 or 6 members. When these apply themselves to the work and understand its requirements, they will quickly find and introduce other suitable members. Number 3. The Legion visitation would be resented. Were such indeed to be the case, the conclusion indicated is that other work should be selected. Not that the idea of the Legion, with all its possibilities of good to members and community, should be abandoned. Be it stated, however, that nowhere so far has the Legion experienced a permanent or general difficulty in this matter of its visitation. Assuming that the visitation is being undertaken in the true spirit of the Legion Apostolate, it may ordinarily be taken that a coldness towards the legionaries testifies to the existence of religious indifference or worse, so that, just where the legionaries are least desired, exists the greatest need for their labors. Initial difficulties of this description do not justify the discontinuance of the visitation. Almost invariably have the legionaries who brave these icy barriers been able to thaw them and to remove as well the graver underlying causes. Full weight should be given to the fact that the home is spiritually the strategic point. To hold the home is to capture society. To win the home, one must go to it. Number 4, young people have to work hard during the day and require their free time for rest. How reasonable this sounds, yet if acted upon, it would leave the world a religious wilderness, for it is not by the leisured that the church's work is done. Moreover, is it not true that the high-spirited young give their free hours to more or less disordered amusement than to genuine rest? In such an alternation between a day of toil and an evening of pleasure, it is very easy to drift into a practical materialism, which, after a few years, leaves hearts without an ideal, eating themselves out for the youth, which has prematurely fled, taking with it the only things they had been taught to prize. And things may end even more unhappily. Does not St. John Chrysostom say that he had never succeeded in persuading himself that anyone could achieve salvation who had never done anything for the salvation of his neighbor? Infinitely wiser would it be to urge young people to give to the Lord in a legionary membership the first fruits of that free time. Those first fruits will inspire the whole life and keep the heart and face too, serene and young. And there is still left an abundance of time for recreation, doubly enjoyed because doubly earned. Number 5, the Legion is only one among many organizations with the same ideals and programs. It is true that idealism abounds and, likewise, that a program of desirable work can be drawn up in a few minutes by anyone possessing pen and paper. It is therefore true that the Legion is only one among 10,000 organizations which propose a noble warfare for souls and a program of important works. But it is also true that it is one of the few which make their apostolate definite. A vague idealism with general appeals to members to do good in their surroundings will always be attended by the vaguest performance. The Legion reduces its warfare to a definite spirituality, a definite program of prayer, a definite weekly task, a definite weekly report, and, it will be found, to definite accomplishment. Last but not least, it bases this methodical system on the dynamic principle of union with Mary. Number 6. The Legion works are already being done by other agencies. The Legion might clash with them. How strange to hear these words spoken of, places where high proportions of the population are non-practicing, are non-Catholic, and where progress is negligible. How sad if anyone should reconcile himself to such a status quo, which means that in that place Herod is to occupy the throne of men's hearts, while the Lord and his dear mother are to remain permanently relegated to the miserable stable. Often, too, those words which deny admittance to the Legion are used in the interest of organizations which represent a name without performance, armies which may exist but never conquer any enemy. Moreover, work is not being done except it is being adequately done. Therefore, work is not being done which is engaging dozens of apostolic workers where, properly, there should be hundreds or even thousands. Unhappily, this is ordinarily the case. Frequently, too, the lack of organization which the small numbers show means corresponding lack of spirit and method. Surely it would be wise to put the Legion to the test by assigning to it even a limited sphere of action. The sequel may be convincing, and the members of a single little branch may, like the 5 barley loaves, be multiplied so that they fill all the needs and over and above. Matthew chapter 14, verses 16 to 21. The Legion has no particular program of works. It does not presuppose new works, but rather a new setting for existing works, not already sufficiently systematized, with effects analogous to those which would follow upon the application of electric power to a work previously done by hand.